who in 1926 created Negro History Week, a short period devoted to public exercises emphasizing the salient facts of history influenced by the Negro. As he stated in his most important study, The Miseducation of the Negro, to counteract the one-sided education of youth, the thinking people of this country have no desire to upset the curriculum of their schools. But if the Negro is to be elevated, he must be educated in the sense of being developed from what he is, and the public must be so enlightened as to think of the Negro as a man. Furthermore, no one can be thoroughly educated until he learns as much about the Negro as he learns about other people. Thus, the purpose of Black History Month, as it is now known, is to revive some of that information. To honor the memory of the father of Negro history, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, we will proceed with our program, which includes the presentation of the Carter G. Woodson Award and the Carter G. Woodson Lecture. First, we will have the presentation of the Carter G. Woodson Award. The first presenter is Dr. Cleo Charles, and the recipient is Dr. Robert Menifee. Dr. Charles.
Tonight's recipient of the first of two Carter G. Woodson Awards received his Bachelor of Arts degree in Economics from Berea College, his Master of Science degree in Business Administration from Tulane University, and his Doctor of Philosophy degree in Economics with a minor in Sociology from the University of Wisconsin. Firmly committed to equality, he has been a leading interracial reformer on campus, in the city of Berea, and in the central Appalachian region. As a Berea College student during the 1930s, this year's Carter G. Woodson Laureate was active in successful efforts to host desegregated annual conferences of the YMCA. When Black students were first readmitted to the college during the early 1950s, he was a major leader in the campaign to desegregate eating and other public facilities in downtown Berea. During one summer of this decade, he interviewed citizens and local and church educational leaders concerning desegregated housing facilities in North Carolina, in Tennessee, and in Georgia. As a member of the Southern Regional Council, he conducted these interviews to study attitudes and to improve race relations in central Appalachia. Since 1940, the first recipient of tonight's award has served as an active member of the Berea Human Rights Commission. As a founder and charter member of this organization, he has helped improve the status of women and minority groups in Berea. During the 1960s and 70s, he frequently served as a member of the Berea College Black History Week Committee, the committee which honors him tonight. In these various capacities, this civic-minded giant spoke persuasively and worked persistently to improve Christian and interracial understanding among students, faculty members, and citizens. He has developed by far one of the most consistent voting records and models of personal commitment at faculty meetings, on college committees, and in civic organizations. Our Carter G. Woodson Laureate is presently the chairperson of the Students of the Future Subcommittee of the Long Range Planning Committee of Berea College. In this position, he has recently written a proposal to the college recommending that Berea seek to achieve an interracial faculty and environment throughout the campus. During the late 1960s, he supported a proposal urging the college to expand drastically the number of Black students on our campus. Although the success of this effort was limited, many of his colleagues are yet influenced by his philosophy and are guided by his wisdom. When others speak, he listens. However, when he speaks, others act. On behalf of the Black History Month Committee, the Brea College community and the interracial community at the foothills of the Cumberland. I, with both honor and humility, proudly salute one of the recipients of the 1987 Carter G. Woodson Award, Dr. Robert Menifee. Dr. Menifee served for many years as the chairperson of the Economic and Business Department at Berea College. As he comes to the podium, I urge him to escort his spouse when she gets here. He's very good at escorting his spouse. As he comes forth tonight, I'd like to honor her as well, a person without whom most of his accomplishments would have been impossible. So he said. Brothers and sisters, please extend to both of them a warm congratulations. Congratulations.
Bob Maxine, as chairperson of the Black History Month Committee of Berea College, it is my honor to present you with the Carter G. Woodson Award from 1987 in recognition of your efforts to foster equality and understanding in interracial and multiracial, multicultural education. Congratulations. The second presenter tonight is Reverend Alonzo Ballard, and the recipient is Mrs. Cornelia Hill Park. Reverend Ballard.
Tonight I'm very much honored to have this privilege to present a lady of distinction to us. A person whom I have known for many, many years. Also one of her sons and I were classmates and graduated from high school together. As you look at this lady standing here today, you wouldn't imagine that she's 98 years old. And if she lives to the 22nd day of November, she'll be 99. We are very proud to have her as one of our recipients. Mrs. Cornelia Hill Park, known as Miss Connie to many, she is a native of Madison County. Much of her 98 years of life has been devoted to providing social services for her church and community at large. A mother of five children and a widow since 1951, she has always maximized her yield from limited resources. She has been able to promote a Christian home life and has committed her life to service through the love of God. She has been an active stewardess with her church, member of the congregation of St. Paul Methodist Episcopal Church of Richmond, organized a club to honor her work, the Carney Parks Club. One of the primary objectives of this club is to demonstrate a commitment to Christ through community service. Miss Connie has been a cook for 90 years. She takes great pride in this. She has been able to use it not only as a source of employment, but as a source of providing services to others. She has been able to take certain limitations of her life, such as a fifth grade education and an early salary of 50 cents a week, and not only care adequately for her family, but to provide assistance for others. She has provided basic nursing care to individuals within their homes. She has performed general housekeeping duties whenever asked. She has provided clothing and other items routinely to those in need. Long before the term of street people was coined, Miss Connie recognized that there was a need to provide a home for those without permanent homes. She has opened her home to provide food and shelter to anyone who needs it. Her home has been a refuge to many. She has provided informal counseling to young teenagers and adults. She has been a better sitter, babysitter for children, as well as care for themselves and conform to their homes. Mrs. Parks has received no major financial support from these activities, but has considered it her own way of providing and giving her help to others from the blessings that she has received. She is well respected throughout her community for her dedication and willingness to serve others in a tangible way. She has truly demonstrated the dignity of manual labor through her service. She has accepted her limitations, enjoyed a long life, and reasonably good health. She recognizes these attributes as her special gift and has chosen to give to the needs of others. It is the most appropriate that we should humbly and recognize a servant of God to be recognized during this time. Miss Connie Parks.
Mrs. Parks, as chairperson of the Black History Month Committee, it is my pleasure to present you with the Carter G. Woodson Award for 1987 in recognition of your efforts to foster the development of unity, culture, or research of Black communities. Thank you very much.
I thank you all very much. I'm very pleased what you all done for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Would Mrs. Parks' family please stand up? I think she said her son is here. Please join us after the lecture and the question and answer session for the reception, which will be held in the green room behind the stage, where you can personally thank both Bob and Mrs. Parks for the contributions that they have made. Our speaker for tonight, who will deliver the Carter G. Woodson Lecture, will be introduced by Mr. Ronald Shaheed. Ronald.
In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, I bear witness openly that there is nothing worthy of worship but God alone. I'll try to be very brief, and that's difficult for me, as some of you already know, who know me. Cleo's laughing right here. Kind of, I don't know if you hear me or not. Andrew said only 5 minutes or less. So. It's not proper anyway when you go before someone to take a long time, so I won't. What we're dealing with in Black History Month tonight is the transformation of a group of people who began a journey in the 1930s. For those of you who are familiar with this journey, it wouldn't take long to acquaint you with what is going to happen tonight. But for those of you who are not familiar with it, we pray to God that you will get some insight into the growth, the transformation of a small group of African-American people called in the 1930s the Lost Foundation of Islam to what we have today, and that is a group of people with a worldview. In our religion, it requires us to have a worldview, to be, in a sense, universal in our looking at the world. Some things stop us from doing that. One is skin color. The other is education. The other is nationality. These are all ideas that the Holy Quran, which is the book of the Muslims, addresses. The man that I am called on to introduce tonight, Imam W.D. Muhammad, was a man who became the leader of that Lost Foundation of Islam in 1975. And he had the difficult task of giving this community, this group of people, a new direction. Those of us who were a part of that journey since 1975 have come to realize that we've really made a lot of changes, really, we really have. So, though I don't know exactly what Imam Muhammad is going to talk on tonight, he did share with me that he will be talking about the transformation from that small group in 1930 who had a small view of the world to a group of people who now have a big view. So without any further ado, I introduce, I bring before you, Imam W.D. Muhammad.
Thank you. In the name of God, we pray his blessings on this occasion. Now, in the time that we have here, I won't be able to thoroughly present some of the ideas, some of the information on the transformation, on the Nation of Islam and its transformation. But I hope that maybe in the question and answer time, we can clear up whatever is left unclear. First, I would like to express my appreciation and the appreciation of the Muslims for the opportunity to be here at Berea College. And we extend our respect and warm regard to the president of the college, Dr. John Stevenson, to Professor Andrew Baskin, who has received us and been our host since we arrived, and to all of the persons in the administration, to the students who are here, we honor this opportunity. In keeping with college commemoration of Carter G. Woodson, or Carter G. Woodson Week, I believe there's been 2 weeks of commemoration, this presentation addresses the Black Muslim, quote-unquote, Nation of Islam as a controlled environment, a learning environment, for treating the social ills of America's discarded Negro population, attempting to give some background at this particular time. It is important for us to know and understanding what transpired in the early 30s, to know something about the little known Professor W. Farad. It's spelled W. In the encyclopedia, it's spelled F-A-R-D, W. Farad, who conceived this environment, correctional, I'd like to call it a correctional environment, and skillfully named it though erroneously, the lost foundation of Islam. It is important to know him for his boldness. His boldness is seen in his forming of a language that would serve to make or create his new black man. He used what some have called a reverse psychology, reversing the psychology of white supremacy with his own psychology of black supremacy. Like Carter G. Woodson, Farrar considered the re-education of the African American to be the greatest need to accomplish work for that need. He conceived what is called the University of Islam. At that time, the University of Islam, and I'm speaking of now 1934, the University of Islam was a black, I hate to use the language that has been made popular, but I have to, it is easier and clearer. The black Muslim school, formed a black Muslim school, and it was a black Muslim school that served the need for teaching, writing, arithmetic, the basics, to not only the children, but also to adults. The school at that time included all the members of the Nation of Islam who would want to take advantage of that school. Men and women up in age, some of them past 65, I'm sure some of them are 80 or more, attended the school. And they were eager to learn how to read, how to write, and how to do figuring, simple arithmetic. His boldness is seen also in his naming that school the University of Islam. He called it the University of Islam. However, the work of this man shrouded in mystery that he created for himself to shroud himself in, was complicated by his own necessary role in it. He was, by America's description, a white man. He tactfully identified with the black man in his teachings and secret lessons to the members of the Lost Foundation of Islam that he created. Soon, he had to trust his environment, his learning environment, his lab kind of environment, to the builder of the Nation of Islam, the man that is known, and much is known about him, the late leader Elijah Muhammad. I was in a meeting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and some of his staff members once at his home in Chicago when he mentioned some of the difficulty that this teacher had. He said that in one of their temple meetings, the houses of worship were called temples. In one of their temple meetings, while he was teaching on the black man, the superiority of the black man, and the black man being God, and descendant from God, and should come back into the Godship, one of the members stood up and said, "Well, if that's the case, then why don't you leave here? And let us take it from here, because you a white man, you a devil." So I'm sure that after that member stood up and challenged him by identifying him with the white race that he had condemned as a race of devils, after that occurred, I'm sure that he saw a need to quickly disappear. And it wasn't long that he did just that. And the history says that as mysteriously as he appeared, he disappeared and left the leadership with Elijah Muhammad, our late and honorable benefactor in many ways, my father, my late father. it appears that in the language of black supremacy and the kind of deifying of the black man, there was also a provision very skillfully worked in, a provision for the transformation of that created nation of Islam. I won't take the time to go into all the elements or to mention all the elements or all of the language and terminology that was used to aid or to help us work our way into a transformation or to work out a transformation for ourselves. I will mention a few things. His obvious contradiction served to arouse our curiosity, and he purposely, and in fact he worked hard at getting the members to question everything. Although in the meetings, the orientation classes, and in the meetings of the teaching classes, no one was allowed to challenge the ideas that we were being given. Still, that invitation to question everything was in the lesson. So you might have been afraid to question the minister, the captain, the lieutenant, or an officer, or your teacher. But when you were alone to yourself, you accepted that invitation to question everything. Now, you know, some people, depending upon their condition, depending upon the extent of their ill, and understand this, that in spite of his racist language and myths and everything, or fictional language, he was a reformer, a social reformer, trying to reform the social habits, the social thinking, the social habits of the discarded Negro or black man, if we prefer to use that term. And understanding him as reformer, it appears that he intentionally did some things to complicate his idea or his masterpiece so that it would be seen as having flaws and big errors in it. There were obvious mathematical errors. There were obvious grammatical errors. Obvious neglect of information, important information about black people that should have been included if he was really bringing knowledge of black people to black people. And also, the theology itself was full of holes. If anyone would try to make it stand the test of reason, you'd have to give up. You'd have to give up. So it is believed that he intended it for people desperate to grab hold of something that will give them a sense of belonging, separate identity, and independence, and independence, and origin, even if it's in myth. But for most of those people, they were worldly naive. The members that he was introducing us to were themselves uneducated and worldly naive, though many of them were brilliant. They were brilliant, but never had the opportunity to receive formal education. They were bright-minded. The fact of that is that Elijah Muhammad, who received no more education
as a child than 3 years elementary school education. And he came to the North from Georgia with no more education than that. But he was able to contain his following, his volatile, explosive following, and lead them into better moral behavior and into a more respectable life, with that little education, which tells us that the man must have had a good mind. He must have had a good brain. He just didn't get the opportunity to be educated. And many of his followers, I believe, were of his same situation or circumstances. They were just denied an opportunity to get an education, but had good minds. And if they had good intentions also, then these elements or these ingredients for transformation would work on them. But if they only had a desire to satisfy some identity need in themselves, satisfy